I am so sorry. This is terrible. I won't give you my sob story. I think you kind of know me, and things don't always go the way that I am hoping. I hope you're not put off with that. You've got little one. Is that Chloe there?
Yeah, she's been with
that. Are you still gonna, like, we're late, but I'm not, there's nothing after you, so I'm good to go now until the time that you need. But will this put you back too far?
I'm good until like
two your time.
At like 2:30. Yeah, I don't know how long.
Oh, you're fine. That's good with me too. Yeah. All right. All right. So thank you for the payment. I'm sorry I hope there wasn't too much hard feeling, but I just calculated the cost and I was like, oh gosh, I gotta do a little better than that. Sorry. Is that okay?
Well, I also was like, I have a lot that I'm having to pay over.
I want you to look at more. So yes, you do need to have a little more. And I did. So you got my message. You saw that I'm looking for any other things too, but I've got some summaries today that I can share with you.
Yeah. I was trying to see I was going to see if I could hurry and send the stuff they sent to me.
Oh, okay. Should I just send it again maybe?
I saw the message.
Oh, okay.
I was going to see if there's more that the office sent over to me.
Okay. I think it was kind of coming down to some U of U records and some Holy Cross records. And then, you know, in general, like if you've created a summary and sent it before, then you can send that again. But I remember I just had to kind of start rewriting it.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Hey.
I was going to see if I could share my screen, but...
That's okay. I think it's an after-the-visit action item. But anyway, I guess the important thing would be to summarize that at least I didn't say anything wrong in my summary to you.
Yeah. Correct to me.
Okay. Which was kind of like... We've got chronic joint pain, fatigue, and the word is dysautonomia, so sinus tachycardia and bradycardia. Hypermobility. You know, that we know the long variable history with different assessments. I said I agree with your physician's assistant that it looks like there's a high probability of autoimmune disease and specifically lupus or a variant of lupus. I was able to pull up I think you've already probably been asked to do this, but there's like a lupus, almost like symptom burden screen.
Yeah.
You've done that.
Well, I've seen criterion, like,
that's fair, but you've done it, and that's one of the reasons people haven't been as impressed as they should be. Maybe it was done, I guess, this last couple years.
Yeah. Wait, I'm not sure.
Okay, I'll just, yeah, it's actually like a specific screening instrument, but it walks down, like you walk down and I don't think it would hurt for me to walk down it with you to remind myself of all the different things you've got going on. Before we do that, let me just check in with you about what's first on your agenda today and how you're just overall wanting to start things out.
So I guess I'll start out by saying I had my visit with Brad.
Okay.
And he actually decided for last week, and I actually kind of freaked out and messaged him about, because I still have fatty liver issues and I've had another, fibro scan for that. And my diet hasn't really changed. Hadn't gotten better. It got like a little bit worse, but still like no like, fibrosis, which is good, but.
Has anyone connected the dots about that?
No.
And you've never heard anyone connect fatty liver to your history of viral Epstein-Barr virus, viral CME, CMV?
No. Okay. I mean, yeah, I was wondering about that because, like, I still think it's weird. Like, my mom and her sisters have it, but theirs is mild. Mine is severe. They've been, like, way obese for so long.
There's multiple factors, and I don't think you need to count obesity as one of them. I mean, one of the sad tales of your life when you get to see the whole picture will be how much you stressed about the weight factor, because doctors and medical professionals told you that was what was going on, and how little that actually had to do with the inflammation. What does have a lot to do with the inflammation is how much you stress about it. And so there is an intersection between the worries and the stress and the, you know, the inflammation. But I was happy to see lots of good indicators. I didn't see like cortisol levels were good, and I didn't see tons of derangements of the catecholamines or other, you know, kind of endocrine things that would say, whoa, you know, your body is like way off. Like, not exactly. Yeah. Like, a lot of you functions well, and then some of you has something that's just been after it for a long time.
Yeah. And that's great, but that's also been where it's been hard. Because everybody's looking for like things to be like totally left.
When we hang up today, I'm going to send you at least two, maybe three articles about the possible connection between lupus or some variant of lupus and post Epstein-Barr, post CMV viral infection. Because when it comes down to it, you have a lot of smoking guns. You just don't have one gun that's been kind of put together as this is the thing. You know, the thing that keeps aggravating me is like double-stranded DNA tests don't just come back positive for people. Sorry.
Okay. I'm not touching my headphones.
Oh, I'm sure you're not. I hope it's not my connection, but
no, it was that I actually did touch it.
Oh,
I
don't know if you heard me, but I was saying double-stranded DNA antibodies do not just come back positive. Okay. So if there was one thing on your entire lab list that was screaming at me, it would be forget about the less important labs that sometimes are positive and sometimes are not. When this puppy's positive, it is specific for lupus.
Yeah.
And okay. I know they can't say it because they've got like academic criteria that certain number of things, but I would suggest that part of the reason we don't necessarily need to get caught up with that is because we're looking at post-viral.
Yeah. Yeah. That was like some of the stuff from the U that was important. Was that the rheumatologist did like a bunch of like lupus specific tests, like all the antiphospholipid tests and stuff like that. Those are all normal.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a mimicker. It's elusive mimicker. So I'll send you two articles about the connection and one article even about how the pathway of activation of the inflammation is not the same, but it's kind of mimics it in some certain ways. You don't actually produce the same antibodies. And this, I found some other papers. I would get those, except they're like $40 and $60 each. I'm like, gosh, you know, but a person could, if they wanted to present convincing evidence that this is a connection that hasn't been adequately considered. And there's way too much narrow thinking going on. You know, we have so many ways to have diseases. We just, the fact that your horse is not a zebra just doesn't mean that it's not a horse.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm a guy who can kind of maintain the high index of suspicion and see a couple other things going on in the labs that do support, I think the general consensus is that it is an autoimmune something. Doesn't mean that they can say it's not. Rheumatology can say it's not a rheumatoid arthritis because it doesn't have an RF and it doesn't have a CCG. And then, you know, people that are like lupus can say it's not lupus, but then there is that nagging problem of you have so many lupus syndrome symptoms and you have a double-stranded DNA. It's kind of like,
It's funny because I have like this lady in my ward, like I've been friends with her, like she's babysit nearly all the time and she has lupus and we'd talk about my stuff like all the time. Like, since Lily was little, and she'd be like, "Oh, I have all that stuff too." Like,
yeah. And have you ever met any honorary members of the lupus club? Like, you know, they're like, "I still can't get diagnosed, but I mean, I had to eventually." Yeah.
Yeah.
It seems like one of the things that has wreaked a lot of havoc for you with your mental health is that you already had the tendency to kind of question yourself and self-doubt. And then to be led on this medical escapade of, am I just making this up? Am I just crazy? It really hasn't done you many favors.
No.
That, and you're extremely intelligent. Like, dang, you were like medical school, like directed. And I remember I was like, oh man, she knows more than like she really would ever want to.
Yeah.
but I guess there's going to be this interplay between how much you get psychologically stuck versus how much is, even neurological complications of post-viral, you know, immuno diseases. How do I know that I'm having brain fog because my immune system's acting up versus that I'm so overwhelmed and stressed and sick of being myself that I'm kind of kind of kicking up the dust? Does it have to be one or the other? No, but you treat each one, right?
Yes. Yeah, it's honestly because I like freaked out about the liver test or whatever. Mm. And I was like being Brad like or just telling like I was like just kind of disappointed in myself with like weight and stuff like and no. I feel like people aren't taking me seriously.
That's on them because they are missing it. I'm not going to be ashamed of this. I'm your biggest fan. Like when it comes to advocating for your health, I've only met a couple people that deserve a bigger megaphone. And I think that when you hear that, I know it's going to sound crazy. Like when you see other professionals just kind of scoff and turn away, but ask yourself, is modern medicine really, does it really have its head on straight? I mean, you're kind of like, no, I've seen under the hood. I know what they're selling. And it's no more than kind of a cursory look at the most likely things and then a shrug and I got other people to see.
Yeah. The rheumatologist, like this last time, sent me to like even more tests, like making me feel like, oh, she's actually like believing what I'm saying. Like she's saying that there's something going on. And then like one test after another, they're all like scans, like an MRI of my knee at the end of the year, because it was like my knee would swell up randomly for years. And it just turned out to be like, oh, it's just like chondromalacia, like.
Yeah, I mean, again, if you want to appear busy, you can order the MRI of the knee. I mean, but it doesn't necessarily show the thought of connecting the dots to the whole process because inflammation is going to result in chondromalacia. It's not going to tell you did it come from the, you know, wear and tear. I don't know how an MRI would tell you at what point it becomes wear and tear. Because, like, these are interconnected things. And if the test can help you understand it and treat it, great. But if it's kind of going to just leave you feeling like you're just more defective and have more problems or the problems don't have immunological names, then it's kind of like, okay, I feel very crazy now. you know.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I went into that because I actually saw an orthopedic specialist.
Mm-hmm.
And because I had been having a lot of knee issues and stuff, and like, it would just not go away. Like, I've been going to physical therapy multiple times, years in a row, like, not going away. I have more problems, like, with my hips and stuff, like, just being really painful. And he, like, was looking at my knee and, like, did some tests and stuff, and was like, well, have you ever looked into autoimmune disease? And I'm like, okay.
Oh my gosh,
yes,
who said that?
I was like, boy, have I. Like, I've looked into all of it.
Yeah, there are patterns of autoimmune disease that you have to see under a microscope. You can look at people's bones. You can look at people's kidneys. Oh, you can look at people's heart. And you can also see it in the liver, but what the liver does to protect itself when it's being, you know, blistered with that kind of irritation is it, you know, develops fibrosis and fat to fill in where it's been attacked, but it doesn't mean that it's that problem.
Yeah.
It's an unfortunate name because it's actually what things look like when your liver is under attack by something. In some cases, I'll own that maybe you're under attack by the inflammation caused by cholesterol, but nah. You know, and that was another thing. I didn't even remember the fatty liver till you reminded me today. And I was looking into the post-viral syndromes, and that was clearly listed too. You know.
Interesting. Yeah, I'll have to ask Brad about that too.
Yeah. And at some point, you only gather enough information to be reasonably sure that you have a mandate to treat. Because no one clearly is going to hand this to you on a silver platter and say, we found it. We found the thing that finally makes everyone believe you. Because you still have to deal with yourself.
Yeah.
You still have to believe you. And what would the treatment even look like? I know you talked about the Amen Clinic. They can identify brain patterns that look like autoimmune disease. And then what? You know, you're out that much money, but you feel better because you're like, I have a picture that says something other than what an MRI would show.
Yeah.
Some people have resorted. I mean, you're on pyridostigmine, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So on people's journey, pyridostigmine is like one of the first medicines that might be introduced. And sure, you know, the hydroxychloroquine and the consideration of methotrexate. But if you've got stuff that floats around that we don't test for, but it causes problems of, you know, let's say it causes problems with the small vessels that are connected to nerves. That's a good way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
Take, for example, trigeminal neuralgia, often associated with lupus. About 15%, and it causes the blood vessels to develop sort of gathered white blood cells in there, attacking something that it thinks is there but really isn't. And in that inflammatory attack, it irritates the nerve to no end. It also cuts off the blood supply, so it causes a very sharp pain. I don't have to tell you this at all. How's that going?
I've been trying to figure that out, like.
Really?
Because I've looked at, like, everything with that. But they never really explain how, like, autoimmunity, like, causes it. Like,
it's the
usually
small...
it's just, like, you get lesions on your MRI. So, like, stuff. And I haven't had any lesions.
What does the S in SLE stand for?
Systemic.
Okay. Now, there's only a couple systems that can be systemic, and one of them's the blood vessels. One of them's the nerves. When it comes to lupus is like, yes, yes. I go after those things. I go after nerves. I go after small blood vessels. And I can even go after tissues of the, like the smallest blood vessel vulnerability is going to be kidneys. It's going to be liver. It's going to be, I would say like peripheral nerves. And then sometimes they get trouble with actual heart difficulties, but not necessarily the kind
that drop your blood pressure, I'd say that looks more like an actual, or heart rate, sorry. Mm-hmm. That looks more like a direct attack on the nerve, but you could say that somewhere up in the neck and head region, if there was inflammation causing my body to attack the small blood vessels, they could cause facial pain, but they could also cause the vagus nerve to get kind of blocked off. And that could raise my heart rate. So you can actually even point to the same anatomic area and say, if I just had a nerve in here that was being impacted, you know, not every nerve, not the whole darn body, but certain nerves that are quite sensitive to small blood vessel supply, they are the ones that are going to act up. And
yeah, well, I don't know if you remember when I was telling you about it, probably, but
I looked back over an email.
Yeah, it was like, I still do have like some issues with it. Especially right now, I'm taking half Lyrica to try and manage some side effects. So I've had like a little bit of it, like coming back a little bit more still.
Burn it.
A little bit of soreness, but it's doable.
I guess I don't think you should go off Lyrica in a quest to determine if it's causing brain fog when there's quite plausible reasons for the brain fog. And the pain will definitely not help brain fog. If you have pain, your brain's going to go like, and it's going to aggravate brain fog. So I don't even think it accomplishes what it's trying to do.
Yeah.
It sounds good.
A little bit less energy. And I've kind of like realized, oh, maybe I don't need like as much. Which has been nice, but it's still sore.
I got a question for you. Sorry to be so excited, but here, under what circumstances would you ever consider getting an infusion, and not ketamine, an infusion of IVIG?
I have considered that. I was thinking, like, during like last year when I started getting the symptoms, I'd actually talked to a bunch of other people I know who have MS about their stuff. And none of them actually get trigeminal neuralgia, which I thought was interesting. But I was talking to some of them like about which providers and stuff they might recommend if I like went down that path. And one of them said they do infusions at an MS center.
Yeah. I know a lot about that. I happen to have had a case I took on of someone who eventually was diagnosed with Stiffman syndrome. And the treatment's the same because it's autoimmune related and it's attacking the body, especially the nerves and the muscles and the tissues. But IVIG changed their life. It allowed them to actually be free of the ongoing problem and damage, but it came at the cost of no official recognition or delayed official recognition that it was legitimate for the disease. You know, they got doctors kind of like, you know, rolling their eyes at them when they would tell them they were doing it. And they felt I was doing it for them. That was the best part. And now they've actually been vindicated since then. We probably saved her life, but that disease progresses to become very, very dangerous. I'd say that lupus's danger comes through either the chronic buildup of problems in kidney, liver, or sometimes it can alter the blood vessels of the heart or cause circulating. Yeah. Have you ever... And has anyone ever heard a murmur when they listen to your heart? Thankfully.
No, I've also had a scan.
Good. That's good. I mean, it's good to know. So, you know, I was trying to think like it goes after a lot of things, but not all of them are going to be like life threatening. All of them are life changing, you know, vision changes, brain fog and this kind of thing. And I think IVIG proposes to try to help the symptoms and not wait for a completely 100% clear path that's not going to appear.
Yeah.
That being said, what if it helps? well, now what? You know, that means I get a couple weeks of feeling good and then it starts not feeling good. And I, not everyone's got that way, you know, to keep going back and do it.
Yeah. So, sorry. And a bright.
Okay. Oh, you're fine.
There.
How are you feeling about like kind of what we're talking about today? Where do you want to steer our conversation now?
Honestly, I think that's what you've said. It's really helpful. Like sending some of the studies and stuff over.
Mm-hmm.
I always was open to that.
Of course. It's frustrating too, right?
Yeah.
Of course it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I don't know if I said that today, talking with Brad, he also kind of says some of the same stuff. He's like the next best thing to a doctrinizer.
No, there's plenty. Some of them are so good, like they recognize it a lot sooner. So
yeah.
Kudos to him, and yeah, I'm glad there's someone else out there supporting you.
With yeah. That. But he actually said today, okay, so you're going to choose, okay, we'll help you with the weight loss stuff. I know, like, that is, like, a loop that keeps coming around.
Mm.
He knows that I'll freak out about that once in a while.
Yeah.
So we'll go through that. Let's try like Ozempic, which I actually was going to try like months ago, but my insurance would not pick it. I had I went to an endocrinologist that was like, she tried like a ton of different types to try and get my insurance to take it, but they wouldn't. Cause I actually kind of have like a high-ish A1C, but it's like, in like a 5.8 to 6.
Mm.
So that's,
can I ask you a very straightforward question?
Yeah.
Why can't we just raise the Vyvanse? What happens when we raise the Vyvanse?
I just barely switched to that one.
It's only 40 milligrams.
Yeah. I was going to ask about that. I'm not sure how, like.
Well, the problem. Okay. I've been the foremost proponent of Ozempic. I've written patients prescriptions for Ozempic all over the place, and when we were doing a lot of compounding, you know, I would send those in, and for some of them it really was game changing. But you know, it's got the warning about the liver problems, and that's one of the main things that we're watching out for with that one right now. It could help, mm-hmm. but it might detract from your bigger purpose, which is to put out the fire and not just the smoke. What I think you might want to ask is, would you consider raising the Vyvanse because my brain fog? Because yeah. We don't really know that that does anything in the liver. And that's not to say you can't do both, but maybe mm-hmm. do one at a time. And that's my 2 cents on it.
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay.
I may have to plug in here in a second. What are your thoughts? You can definitely get the Ozempic. My own wife did it. I was like, you know, here, let's get you on it. Let's try it. So like I said,
he actually started it already.
Oh, okay.
So he has samples in there. That's why he was like, we can just start it. See how it works for like 8 weeks. But
he's actually on it.
And then after that, he's like, then we can get you on the methotrexate. Because he knows, like, right. I probably would still freak out about it. I didn't.
I'm not freaking out. I'm fine. Basically, oh, you mean you with the methotrexate?
Yeah, I'm basically, trying, like, just not being sure and starting it. Like, I mean, I'll start it, but I'm just confused. he still thinks I should do it, obviously.
Yeah.
And I have it. Like, I already picked it up and everything, but. Yeah, I just,
Sorry, that's me trying to switch to something that still has battery life.
Yeah, I know, I need to turn off my car.
So the methotrexate was like, okay, scary. We're talking about like almost like cancer drugs and stuff.
Scary in that the past like 2 weeks, both of my girls have just been sick, and we've been sick with cops and stuff. But like, so I'm like, I just really don't want to. Yeah, and I also just want to, like, I've heard it has, like, awful side effects, but I dug into it, and I guess most of them are, like, just the first couple of days that you take it for the week.
It has a lot of potential side effects, but we can get back to that. I mean, it's hitting with a, I guess it's kind of using a large blunt instrument to try and knock things down. The IVIG is much more of a, I would call it more a specific instrument, but clearly there's differences in cost and availability there. So, if we switch gears to talking about the Ozempic trial, how long have you been taking it?
Like literally just today.
Okay.
He was like, we'll just do that then. I think it's more that we'll get that out of the way is kind of.
It's not going to be like that. You know, because there's this large, long up titration to keep going on. You know, if you're willing to prescribe it, then you're willing to go up to the second lowest dose in 2 weeks. And then maybe the third lowest dose in two more weeks. And we could do that for a couple months.
Yeah,
till you're throwing up.
Yeah, he, I think, just wants to keep it at the 0.25.
Then don't do it.
But, yeah.
You're buying with that is a checking the box with maybe the possibility of liver irritation and not really getting to know if it would work or not and leaving you more confused. The thing about that situation, I think that kind of mimics other situations that you've run into. And not just medically, but I think medically especially, it's like when someone's not really meeting you quite where you want them to, and you don't you don't want to say, you know, go jump in a lake because that's not how you feel, but you also don't feel like, sure, I'm just fine with that plan. You know, that sounds great. Just keep me on 0.25. And you know what I mean? Am I onto something or am I wrong?
I don't know.
You can write to me later about it.
I think that's early
childhood stuff.
Yeah. Wait, say it again.
Oh, I think that may reflect early childhood stuff. I think that may reflect complexities about family relationships because people don't just suddenly one day say, well, I'll start being assertive or I'll start being passive. They've always been a certain way and then they kind of modify that. So I don't know. This may not be the time to segue into any therapy, but I wouldn't want you to come away from this just excited about the possibilities, but also kind of seeing where there's intersection with core beliefs or.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. But anyway, it's a long-winded way of asking, what do you want to do about the Ozempic if they only want to keep it at 0.25?
Well, I think he just honestly thinks we'll just try it for like 8 weeks and then probably won't do it anymore. That's kind of.
And what do you want?
I got.
What do you want? So let's pretend the doctor wasn't the one pulling the strings. Let's pretend you had your own medical license and you could do what you wanted.
Yeah.
What would you, in that dream world, hypothetically, want to do with this Ozempic?
I don't want to take it, but I kind of have thought that it's like my last resort.
Okay. But let's stick with the answer that came out, which is I don't want to take it, right? Why take something if you don't want to? You said, well, because it feels like it's my last resort. Okay. I can get, you know, you definitely have felt like nothing else is helping. I might as well at least get some of the weight control there so that I can feel like I've got something under my belt.
It's just a very discouraged place.
Yeah.
And it is, and it's a discouraging situation. Of course, it's natural to be like, well, I don't want to do it, but like, what the heck else can I do? I think that's good to know. I think it just kind of informs the decision making, because there's a difference between someone mm-hmm. who's like, I want to do it. I want to make sure it works. I want to go all the way up to the full dose. When you're,
yeah,
you know, but
yeah, it's more that I'm like open to trying it.
No, you are. Now, here comes my challenge for you, okay?
Okay.
I sometimes challenge you, and that's okay. It's not a criticism, just know that. What's that?
Chloe.
Oh, dear. If you felt that this was one of your last options, why wouldn't you pursue
it? Hang on, I'm going to pick it.
My loud voice.
No, I actually have my headphones on.
So I was saying, let's go with the idea that I don't really want to do it, but it feels like there's nothing else left to do. What would prevent you from doing it all the way? Because, you know, all the way means getting up to the full dose to make sure it actually can do something or not. But again, if it was up to you, not up to the prescriber in 2 weeks, and you were choosing it, mm-hmm. I don't really want to, but I'm going to because it just feels like there's nothing else left. Then help me understand how would you say that you feel when there's that, and then I wouldn't really see it through. I wouldn't go up to the dose that might help.
For me, I guess like I've always known exactly what to do, but just haven't gotten myself to do it.
Well, what is it? Do you think you know?
Yeah, well, like, moderation. I've gone to, like, a couple different nutritionists and stuff, and I've done, like, I've gotten, like, I've gotten personal trainers before, but I think, honestly, I just don't have the confidence in myself to do it.
I don't agree that those are actually the things that need to be done, but if those have always been the answers and you feel like you always don't feel confident enough to do them, then what's wrong with just embracing that and maybe bumping up the vitamins?
Yeah.
I wonder what that costs, though. I wonder what that costs to say, okay, so yeah, I'm not confident and I'm not going to do it. You know, like, to own it.
Yeah. I mean, I can be a little more like headstrong too.
Oh, really? I would like to see a little more of that. I think that looks good on you. And I think it reflects your true desires and not necessarily the imposed expectations or the self-imposed expectations.
Mm.
It's sometimes hard to sift through what is truly our wish versus like something we were expected to do. But it can be a real hang up. Like, in some ways, the person who commits to just one small activity wholeheartedly wanting to is going to be miles ahead in a few years of the person who doesn't commit to something that's so much more than that, and they just don't, that was never really quite what they wanted, you know? It's, you find that tortoise and hare analogy to be adequate.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've always been, frustrated with myself because I've always, been like more like athletic and like wanting to try everything. And
yeah,
I just don't know really
what happens. You know yourself to you mean that's who you've known yourself to be, and you can't understand why you don't feel like confident enough to try to reach to push for it more? Not sure if that's what I'm hearing.
No, I just feel like I've let myself down and gotten myself to where I am now.
All right.
From just like not, I guess like since Shay and I got married and then, like moving away from college, like, and suddenly I'm not like involved, like in something.
Yeah. Right.
I'm lost. I don't know how to just like take care of myself and like,
yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Without so, like, being involved like, in something. I don't know.
Yeah. Like I relied on a certain external structure or set of organizations to keep me active. And well, suddenly those were all gone. And I looked at myself and said, self, are you going to jump up and create all that? And you're like, no. And you feel disappointed by that, and you feel like you've kind of let yourself down.
I did
so
it
you
again.
You feel disappointed in yourself, and you feel like you've let yourself down. That doesn't always mean that that's why my health is not good, but you're pointing to things that you felt were in your control before. And said they could be in my control now. I could take the reins, and I don't.
Yeah.
All right.
I guess I keep finding excuses.
Okay. And what does avoidance tell you about your frame of mind? This isn't a trick question. It's just a, well, it's not a, it's a question with an intended answer. Avoidance. Okay, sorry.
I have no idea where the button is.
It might not be even you. See, I hope it's not me, but let me talk.
No, it is. It's my.
Okay. Okay, so even if it is you, let's go with that. But go back to the.
No, no.
Let's go back to the first.
I
the
just
conversation,
barely
right?
touched it.
Okay, but what is avoidance telling you about your fear?
What?
What does avoidance tell you about your fear?
Failure.
That it's there. People don't avoid stuff that they are unafraid to do, and they just need to set aside some time to do it. There's always some amount. You could call it fear. You could call it worry or hesitation, or maybe just the amount of work that's going to be involved is so high, but something about the cost is like kind of causes some hesitation. And then I do other things.
Yeah, I don't know. I think also for me, it's like there's so many things that I just like want to do and should do, and I don't do any of it because I just like struggle with the management of just like starting something.
Okay. Right. And that's the problem. It's not so much that you have larger than realistic expectations of yourself. That's not the problem.
That's probably also a problem.
It could be. You're allowing it could be. Let's say you made a pie chart of, and you were going to slice the pie so that some of the pie gets to go to my over idealized and impossible expectations for myself is what's contributing to a sense of failure versus my under utilization of the time and energy given to me to just go after them. You know, I have no, it's not a problem of my imagination. My imagination has all kinds of things. It's that I'm not doing them. You know, how would you divide up the pie?
I mean, I definitely very often I'm beating myself up because I don't do enough for
okay.
I
would show some kind of smaller wedge for my ideals are just so impossibly high and I'm setting myself up for failure with how many things I'm trying to do versus I really just don't do enough. Like, I feel like that's more of it.
Yeah.
More than half the pie. Would it be like a 90% thing or like a 80% looking pie?
I don't know. I feel like I don't do enough. And I also feel like other days when I want to do more, I also have symptoms that are more.
Ah, you probably have some interrelatedness to those two things. There's a cycle that you're already familiar with where it's kind of like idealization and devaluation of myself leads to ups and downs of I'm determined to do everything and then I'm determined to do nothing at all. And that can even be one follows the other. But isolating it to just one or the other doesn't make as much sense for you because you're aware how the sense of being defeated and sad and shamed actually drives so much that you want to do. It almost creates lots of new possibilities. It almost puffs out that horizon beyond what you can reach again, so that you can do the same thing. And that cycle may actually be partly kind of one and the same. It has to do with an unstable sense of, you called it self-confidence, but it's kind of an unstable sense of being just sufficient and loved as I am with or without the accomplishment. It kind of speaks to the accomplishment is what defines my worth. So I have to, I bake a lot on doing so many things and then I lose a lot. It's kind of like investing in the wrong thing. You know, I put all my money in the one pot and then that stock goes way down and I lose all that. And I feel so bad about it that I have to find the next big thing that's going to, you get my point, right?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, so identifying that as one of the hamster wheels that you run is helpful because it can start to draw some lines between where I think if someone was to accuse you of going too far in a medical setting, they would have to appeal to that all or nothing mentality. They'd have to say something like, you've pressed doctors for tests and that's not true. That you've asked questions, but you haven't necessarily said, I demand to have an MRI of my knee.
Yeah.
So there's a difference. I mean, but it can start to feel like a performance situation.
Yeah. Which there was a couple.
What's that?
But there were a couple times I did say, nope, I want to do that anyway.
Okay. And those were times when you were being healthier. Then when it's kind of like, whatever you want to do, I'm probably a fake anyway.
Yeah.
Those were healthier times, even if you were wrong.
Mm-hmm.
See, that takes a lot of unconditional self-regard. People that have been valued regardless of performance do not respond to a failure or a C on the test with that kind of, okay, I was wrong. Made a big mistake.
Yeah.
It's really wrong, you know.
I definitely had a lot of embarrassment.
Yeah.
Like that, I asked for the lip biopsy when we thought I had Sjogren's.
Mm-hmm. You still use the same dry eye, drops. That most people with Sika use, which is basically Sjogren's without, the dry mouth.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
But, yeah, I get it, though. It's, embarrassing. To whatever extent I might look and feel embarrassed or ashamed, I didn't like that.
My ENT tried to talk me out of it.
Okay. So what? You wanted it, so what?
Who cares?
Okay. But you haven't necessarily given yourself a lot of grace about that, and it's important to notice that, when it comes to the responsibility for these decisions and why I don't do things, it could just as well be that you t- tell yourself things about yourself that, you know, impact whether you'll do more. But anyway, the cognitive exercise of dividing the pie could also be, you could go back to it and say, well, I drew the line here. How come I didn't draw the line here? And you can either draw it above or below that line. You know, depending on the clock face. And that question might be, I mean, you can even do that yourself. Like, why don't I assign even more responsibility to those? Why don't I blame myself even more? And why do I tend to not completely say that it's because of my ideals either? You know, well, because I've got lips for you. You know.
Okay. I don't know. Yeah, I often still am bouncing back to like, oh, well, maybe all of like the autoimmune stuff or like people thinking I have it is because I was too convincing. Like I made them think that.
I know you get yourself into a, in your head, and that's where you're in your head a lot, is like when you think you've convinced people to go along with it. As though you've had this irresistible power of persuasion that they couldn't possibly have done otherwise. You know, they were just, well, so what you see expressed there is the fantasy and the fear to be powerful and to be capable of influence and maybe even capable of manipulation if I want to be, you know, treading on the dark Jungian themes. But the things that don't feel like who you are, in fact, they feel like what you would want to be as distant as possible from, they have to find their way to become incorporated in.
Yeah, I mean, I think I have like a lot of fear that I've over exaggerated everything, like to a point where like people think all of my symptoms are worse than they actually are. And
they're convinced that I'm holed up in my house on bed rest because I've basically told them too much and I made it sound like I was too needy.
Yeah. And really it's just because I'm depressed and like overweight or something.
You even glanced around. Well, there is someone there. So have you ever heard of the term shadow work before?
Yes.
Okay. So Jung talked about the shadow as being something we hold outside of ourselves as not, it's not who we are. In fact, we don't want to have anything to do with that aspect of ourselves. And for some people, it's their capacity to be malevolent. And in others, it's their capacity to be dependent. When someone is afraid to be dependent, they experience fears and anxieties and dreams about being seen as needlessly too exaggerating of their need. You know, the worst kind of person in their mind is the person who is yelling at the top of their lungs about something that's very objectively small to others. And the fear to be that caricature reflects something of a, I can't ever be someone who speaks too loudly compared to what their problems are. It's not even important that I don't have big problems. It's that I don't exaggerate them to anyone. See, yeah. In that way, it's actually a fear to be overbearing, a fear to be too, have too much need, or to make myself the one who deserves right now attention. And it starts to feel like I'm just making, you know, maybe I'm just making it up so I can have sympathy. Okay, so what? People do that. But incorporating that into yourself may be the challenge of one of the challenges of therapy, because it involves a certain amount of what did that mean to you once upon a time when you would be mortified to attract unnecessary attention to yourself or make it as though your needs should come before others. I do think that's a family relationship related issue.
Definitely starts there. I also did, I probably have mentioned it before.
Maybe once. You can remind me.
When I, probably like five times. No. When I first thought I had Sjogren's, I did like a little, like, post. You know, my headphones wasn't really when I first thought I had struggled, I like made a post like talking about like some of the things I've gone through and like that I finally think I figured it out, like whatever, like, except I at the time said I did figure it out or like,
yeah,
and I wrote like more deep, like here's like all the stuff I've been going through, like, and but it just, I honestly like kind of thought that maybe someone could relate and like someone could reach out or something and it could like maybe be helpful, but instead it turned around and bit me, and people were like talking to my mom and Faye and just like behind my back, like asking if I'm looking for things to be wrong and if I'm okay and like just basically seeking attention or something. I don't know. And so
So let's go with that.
Asking Shay, like, is Emily there? Is she just looking for things to be wrong? Like, and it wasn't like I was posting every day, like, this new thing happened, blah, blah, blah. Like, there's one post, and then, I mean, I had mentioned, like, struggling with OCD, like, in another post or two, or, like, I was trying to be more, like, open and not shy, or, like, just, so I guess that came across as, like, looking for attention, just trying to be real and not fake.
Yeah. I think what would be helpful, it might be helpful to peel back away from this, the medical aspect, and go back to a time when do you ever remember a feeling like that where your intention was just to reach out, just to make contact, just to be open, to tell people what's going on, and it was in any way received by a family member or a friend as like, as an attempt to do something different than that.
Yeah.
You can find
that's
that memory.
Yep.
Is that that's a core memory?
Right there, yeah.
Say an in and out, is that a core memory? There may be a couple things coming to you. Maybe, are you even noticing something you feel in your body right now?
Well, I think, I mean, I've definitely mentioned, like, all of my math issues and stuff. Like,
yeah.
That's my mom. And like, even now, like, she still is like,
wow.
Yeah, but.
We're getting good. I think we're getting closer when we bring up math because it's harder to say that's medical. It's reaching out for something that you need. I feel like because it was such a long, protracted difficulty and it's kind of sucked up a lot of air, there might be earlier times that were patterned after that, but they didn't necessarily come to such a big dramatic head because they were just day-to-day interactions. But sometimes the foundation for a big drawn out being disbelieved is the day-to-day disbelief, and it can be subtle. Like earliest memories of coming to parents, mom, dad for something you needed, support, you know, I'm hurt, holding hands out, that kind of thing.
I don't know. When I think more about this stuff, I think more just, I mean, there's times when like, honestly, like, I'd say I dysregulated and couldn't, like, regulate my own emotions. And I remember, like, maybe it was honestly all around the same time frame, but just freaking out, like, bawling, like, that I just, like, didn't have friends and stuff or something like I don't even know what brought it on or whatever, but I remember like my mom being like, you're fine, like you have friends, like everything's fine, like, and just like that was the first time that I ever, like, it was honestly probably a panic attack, like, that I recognized. You know, like,
yep. It doesn't.
So it was just like, I couldn't breathe. Like, I was crying so hard and I was freaked out. And she was like, everything's fine.
Right.
And just feeling, I've always felt like, even since elementary school, that, like,
yeah,
something's wrong with me. It's like, I am crazy. Like, I don't think other kids are thinking all this stuff.
Yeah. That's good. I'm glad that you're reminding, well, first of all, that you're able to see it and talk about it is great. I mean, because we've had to work on not feeling like, I'm not throwing my whole childhood under the bus. I'm not saying everything was wrong. I am not saying I had it the worst off, but I'm answering a direct question Dr. Nyberg seems to keep asking me, so I have to answer it. So yeah, there were times when Mom did that, and it doesn't mean everything was wrong, but there was something I was experiencing that was not okay. I could have been having a panic attack. I could have been having a heart attack. My effort to communicate my distress wasn't met with something that I needed, regardless of the outcome, regardless of what it would turn out to be. Because a child's emotional need to be connected with actually might be the highest form of safety there is, other than is something, am I dying and are you going to leave? It's like, I don't feel like I'm okay. And some parents think that the way to respond to that is by saying you're okay and saying it over and over again, factually. Because they mistake their comfort source for what your comfort source is. Maybe they would have been very reassured by that answer when they were younger. Maybe they're a different kind of person. That's pretty much a fact. They're a different person. But to assume perhaps in that moment that what this child of mine needs, and none of you come with instruction manuals, the one that you have right here in front of you actually needs that as opposed to something else from me that's harder, how would you know? You just do whatever feels natural, which turns out to be a lot more like how you were raised and a lot of stuff like that. Do you see the thread? It's not a causation. It's a predisposition for the way you experience these answers that medically are reassuring as you're okay, as a reenactment.
Yeah, I don't know. I've also wondered about that. Like, if I really do just want to confirm that something is wrong.
What if they're both important?
Because I was like, that would mean I was like, right, I've always had something wrong.
Well, like, I'm going to be kind of disappointing to you. It's too easy of an answer to simply say, the reason I've always felt this way is because something was wrong and no one could figure it out. That's not being as forthright as we need to be.
Yeah.
What we need is the courage to say whatever was wrong. And there could be things now wrong that weren't wrong then because I've had to, you know, cope with this feeling so long. Whatever was wrong, the injury wasn't in the missing it. It was in not connecting with how I was feeling about that. That's the injury, which is sort of surprising when you think about it. You're like, no, the injury would be missing it. It's like, no, because people that grow up with someone's sense of meeting their emotional need for reciprocity, it doesn't have to mean they agree something's wrong. They can still give their same spiel later about how, you know, this and that are normal and you don't have anything going on. They could do all that. But if they do that first and not after the connection, you know why that's not connection, I'm assuming. You didn't feel connected with. It doesn't reflect the same energy wavelength that you're on. And in some ways, it's actually an invalidating response, even if it's true.
Yeah.
How can we have an invalidating response while still being true? Well, it's the manner of delivery. If I said, hey, those are nice glasses you're wearing, and you said, thanks, but I got them at the thrift store, or
You said, thanks, and I got them at the thrift store.
Yeah.
How different would that be? Because one's like, yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and negate that. And then the other's like, and I got them cheaply. Ha ha ha. So,
yes.
Right. So even those subtle differences, and that's just language. I didn't even go with like tone and expression and so much more that we're very attuned to as humans, and especially children in our mothers. Oh my gosh. We're looking at them like, am I crazy or not? And if they say something like, there's nothing wrong, it starts to reinforce the sense that I just make things up. And I disappoint people because I just bring them stuff that's not real. Which is not...
dramatic.
It's not because she wanted to do that to you. And it's not because everything you thought was going on was right.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a co-created situation where the tendency to have these symptoms, which you've already noted in other siblings, was experienced differently for you, and maybe they had different ways of approaching their problems, but the dance that you've done from a young age has set up a self-reinforcing, you know, kind of paradigm for I think I just make too much of these things, and that is a very punishing ethos. That's a very, I mean, it could be motivating at some level because you never say anything to anyone, but then you're trapped because now you've had to go with one of the two false options. Either there was nothing going on at all, not even a panic attack, which you could feel was happening. Okay. It wasn't even that. It's like, okay, then I am absolutely out of touch with my body. And then the other option is, so the world's not safe. So doctors yeah. aren't safe. So mother's not safe. So like, okay, no, neither of those are acceptable, especially when you're younger.
Mm. Yeah.
It's a lot to think about, but I wanted to kind of touch that base and then work on helping you regulate as we take the next 20 minutes to close up. Yeah. What comes to mind or heart or body as you're sitting here thinking on this? I think where I jumped in was when you were saying, wouldn't that be something to find out that it was always something going on and how that's been a wish?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess just the need to be validated. And
for different intention.
What was that?
For a different intention. You can still express the need to be validated, but one person's explanation is, oh, that's because they want to be in the sick role. And the other person's explanation is because that's a reenactment of what they've experienced, where you're fine means you're not feeling anything.
Yeah.
You can, yeah. So I wondered about that, like whether you were aware that there was a difference between a desire to feel connected with on the pain subject without necessarily the intention to deceive people and get a diagnosis or something.
Yeah. I think, I don't know, I'll have to think about that.
It's going to take a couple rinse and repeat, so don't, that's actually why I don't mind at all hearing things again and again, because you need to share them again and again until they sort of stick with you in your day-to-day life. It's not actually about what you remember from the appointment. It's about the rinse and repeat process. So like here we've brought you to a point where it's a little overwhelming. There's a lot that comes to mind. I don't know where to start. I'm just going to have to process that. I'm going to have to think about it. Good. But you do most of the work here. I would say you do kind of when you come to that feeling and you're like kind of a little overwhelmed by it and don't know what to say. And so it's important to keep feeling that way by going back to the injury and massaging it a little bit in a therapy setting, that's, you want to go to that place and then come back from it again and get good practice at, like, feeling a little off.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like I've kind of used, like, kind of like a victim mentality, but...
Be as fair as you can.
Yeah.
You can say that if you wish to. But if you have to go with that explanation, then be very kind about why.
Because Chloe just woke up after. Yeah, that's what she said.
That was what she said?
Yeah, she likes to say yeah a lot.
Because yeah.
Which means I need to say no more. Because you gotta.
Well, let's not read too much into that. We want... Maybe she was answering your question. Like, if I truly do have to take some ownership of wanting to be, have sympathy, right? And I'm really afraid of that. I hate that. I don't like that about myself, right? And that's part of it, but it's not the whole story. Why was I doing it? Because I needed something?
Yeah,
you needed something. Okay. Which is not wrong. Not wrong to need something. And as children, if you need something and you can't get it, children do exactly what they're going to do. They try to get that. Now, I'm not endorsing the entire explanation. I'm just rolling with it in case, you know, you're on that same path later today and you're like, no, I'm certain that I just look for attention. Try to, you know, convince people I need sympathy. It's like, oh, that's a terrible thing to think about yourself. And you just do that on purpose for no reason? It's like, I came from somewhere. I was a child little once.
I think the thought that popped in my head, but I think I also, it's not necessarily for attention. I think it's like, if there actually are things wrong, then like I have like excuses for why things have been hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But otherwise, like, I'm not allowed to, like, I don't know. I have the same, like, I guess, advantages everybody else, so like, why do I suck? I guess it's like
not everybody is saddled with that kind of parent-child complex, actually. We all have different things, but not everyone has that. To be honest, there's plenty of just good enough parents that for whatever reason, genetically and dispositionally, they've managed to meet the basic expectations of the emotional connection. And I don't, it's just misfit. Was mismatched. But at the same time, if you go with what you're saying, that you have all these other, you have all kinds of options and possibilities and opportunities, the launch point of, okay, I do recognize that not all of it is just me being lazy or avoiding. It's not just that I don't want to do hard things. That couldn't be, because it wouldn't explain why was it that I could do hard things for a while in some
way,
right? And then
I think about that all the time.
Go ahead.
Just what you said, like, I'm always like, well, it's just that I'm so lazy. And I'm like, well, I didn't used to be. I used to be very determined, and now I'm
of course, and of course, you know, a person doesn't even change at all across the lifespan. I'm just joking, but in that kind of thought process, it should just be a pristine me that never changed this whole time. Even adaptive changes that have reasons for them, like people slow down. I mean, let's not talk you out of a healthy lifestyle. Although I would be the first to at least encourage that thought. It would do you a lot of good mentally. So But when I'm 60 or 50, I can't be saying to myself, like, I used to do more things. Well, that may be true. It's just, it's irrelevant.
Yeah.
At what point does it become irrelevant to compare how you used to be? That depends a lot on what's riding on it.
Yeah.
It could be I'm still clinging to the possibility of going back to who I was. That does need to, I think when you talked about accepting certain kinds of things, and I don't know quite how you said it, but it struck me that there was some mourning to do still, and that's one of those things that is mourned, is that even if I was well today and fully understood, I ain't no going back. I'm different now. Even if I'm only giving that 10% of the pie, I'm different now. And that means I have to decide what I want or what to do about that. I can be critical as I like, but if the reason for my criticism is because I used to be different, that doesn't mean anything. Yes, you used to be different. And I didn't used to have a belly. And there's things about us that are different now. The why this happened is important. The journey is important. The reminding yourself of the steps that were taken and the choices that were made and the ownership of those things gets you to today. But it doesn't get you tomorrow. If you, I love it. It's cute. Well, look at that. Actually, if you want to talk about the opposite of a failure story, how badly did you want this baby?
Bad, but it definitely was rough.
Yes. So when you were running circles around your current self in high school and whatever college, and someone had said to you, there's going to be a time when another child you want to have come into this world is going to, you're going to want them, but in order to have them, you need to trade off your activity. You're not going to be as active then anymore. If you had decided to do it as opposed to feeling like it had happened to you, how different would you feel?
Yeah.
I mean, assuming you even agreed, you're like, oh, heck no. Sorry, Chloe. It's like,
yeah.
But yeah. I don't know. I mean, it can be whatever you want, but the trade-off is still an imagined decision to take it on as a consequence of where you've been, as opposed to I've been victimized by it.
Yeah.
It took away my life. It took away my childhood. It's like, not exactly. And yes, it was hard.
Yeah.
You know.
That makes sense.
Give me a few last, take 5 minutes and I'm going to mute my mic and I'm going to listen, okay? I'm not allowed to talk because I do a lot of talking. Chloe may talk mostly, but is there anything that comes to your mind hearing this now? I know you said, I just want to think about it. Any last thoughts that are coming now or feelings?
Yeah, I guess like going through that, like just brings me back to what you're saying, like mourning, like a lot was like going to school and like going into like physical therapy assisting and stuff. Like I had been planning that for a very long time. Gone to a lot of different classes and internships and stuff, and then didn't quite make it through again because of math coming up. But then while I was pregnant with her, I did end up like getting my associates and getting the math done that I needed to after trying 6 years with other different math. Turns out I just needed to take statistics and it made a lot more sense to me than anything else. And I can understand some of the like journals now a lot more after taking that class. But that aside, like I I did leave like that open for like possibly still completing that, but now I'm at a point more where I'm like, should I, you know, because it might not actually be a great thing for me to do right now. I'm even struggling, like, getting myself to, like, exercise even a little bit, like, just because of, like, aches and pains and stuff. So I kind of am like, how can I even help other people in that setting? Like, it would be hard for me, but, yeah, I don't know.
Let me jump in, because I liked everything you said, and I want to build on it. We have a few minutes left. We're not in any rush, but I want to help you have a nice, smooth landing here after tackling some tough issues. And part of that is reframing, basically. The loss of potential selves, future selves that could have been, that might have been, that would have been, had there not been other effects and actions and consequences and some decisions too. I mean, it's all interconnected, but you don't get to live and not be impacted by others and impact your others as well. You don't get to. You are in the soup, so to speak. But those potential selves, I would have liked to have those opportunities. And there are things I do appreciate about where I am and some of the trade-offs that have come with those changes. I mean, I can't say I'm perfectly content, and I can't say that I'm miserable. I have received good things, and it has not been what I expected. If anything, that's the one constant that I've had, is it hasn't been what I expected. That's really true for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And, okay, so what does that mean for me right now? Well, it means that I can make decisions, and those decisions will also narrow somewhat my options, because that's actually what happens the whole rest of the way from here. It's like we become more and more narrow in our scope of what we do and why we're here and what we're about. Yeah, we have a pluripotent potentials of selves, but we're closing those doors just as fast as we open up the doors for grandchildren and doors for, you know, eventually not working as much, or, you know, having a change of pace. And you can do anything even now within those bounds, but you can't bring back the pluripotential. You're starting from this branch point, not from where you were. So if you don't like yourself very much, or you haven't reconciled your journey to get to where you are now, it doesn't even matter what you do now, because you won't like any of the branch points. They all come from the same you. They're not coming from the you you were, so they cannot fulfill the desire to kind of go back in time. I think that's where you're very properly understanding that the mourning to do is not of your entire life lost. It's of different other lives not experienced. Kind of not a death, but a lack of a birth.
Yeah, and trying to figure out, like, what I can still do using some of those things that I've learned with those, I guess.
Well.
But I just don't know, like, how things are going to be, like, if I do have, like, chronic illness and stuff going on. Like, I don't know.
If I was a writer and someone asked me, what do you want to write about? I would say, I don't know. I don't know anything. It's like, no, you know things. What do you know about? What have you lived? What's your experience? Because really, you shouldn't write about things unless they're things you know about. Like, you can imagine things, of course, but at the end of the day, the most compelling author is the one that's bringing their world to you. You may not have planned for the way your life went and the job skills you have now acquired. But make no mistake, you have acquired several job skills
I don't know how, where you are of what those are.
Yeah.
For starters, you are now almost a shoe-in for an advocate, regardless of what you think about your own self. I mean, us doctors, pitiable as we are, going every day and still help people, even if we don't much like ourselves, we do it, and we actually feel a little better. And it's not so much the case that, oh, because I don't have perfect mental health, I can't help people. No, they kind of polish you off too while you're working on polishing them. So, okay, so advocate, you have been through this system. You know a lot about people who go through this system. Doesn't matter. You don't have to do it. But if you're just taking inventory and stock of the resources that you've inadvertently accumulated, that's one place to start. Okay.
Yeah.
Can you think of another? Even if you think it's a negative, blurt it out and we'll make it some kind of job skill.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I do have a job right now, actually. But it's like setting up photo booths.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not doing my own, like, photography stuff.
Okay.
Even though I've started out kind of doing some of that. But, I wanted some more hours here and there. So I asked if I could go to different venues and stuff and just hand out cards and try to get some people to sign up to have photo booths at their events and stuff. Because if people sign up with our name, we can get $100. So I originally was kind of leading into that, like, if they wouldn't mind if I just went places and, like, handed out my card with my name on it. But then that put me kind of in a position of getting a promotion.
Yep.
And so my boss ended up saying, well, actually, right now, we really need to advertise and start, like, getting into all the venues for weddings and stuff. So, actually, sorry, but you accidentally got yourself on the marketing team.
Oh, no.
So now I'm in marketing. but, yeah, me and some of the people that have been there, like, a lot longer than I have. I started in October.
Mm-hmm.
Are going around to different venues and, like, getting people to sign up or trying to get on their preferred list so that they'll, like, tell their clients about it.
Okay. Now, I don't know how you feel about that, but that is an example of a transformation between what you were reaching out for and wanted to do, and then life happens and you find yourself in a different path. And, you know, you can always, I mean, you always have the opportunity to scuttle the whole thing and try to find a way to do the photography, but you're following that trail where it leads right now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough because, I mean, more so with, like, the trigeminal neuralgia, that was
a
pretty big one.
Yeah.
That could just flare, like, whenever it wants to.
Ouch.
So, yeah. Yeah. So that, that makes it hard for me to want to, like, reach out and just start doing a job that's not, like, as needed, kind of.
Okay. Right. Well, I mean, I'm glad you're acknowledging that there's something other than your own, just, oh my gosh, I'm pathetic and lazy and all this, that could impede you from doing it, not just, I don't want to. I could, and it could be a little bit harrowing sometimes to have, that was mine. The horn was over here. You know, to have it just leap up and I've got to make it to the shoot, or I've got to go in. I've got to schedule. People are depending on me. It's like, well, I do want things and, you know, but I'm accepting of some amount of realistic limitation. Given that regardless of whether I have the medical condition or not, I have the impairment. it's almost like a willingness to believe your subjective experience.
Yeah.
It still limits, doesn't it? I mean, we're not superhuman. I've been living in hotels here for days, and we found this house that we really like, but we have one house that we can rent now. We can move in tomorrow, but we found one in the same neighborhood, everything, but it's just got, it's better. We like it more. They're not even going to move out for like 10 days. So here we are. I'm making this analogy because I think it'll be useful. So here we are. We're going to be hotel. No, we finally broke down and got a Airbnb, because if we had known we'd be hotel hopping, I think we would have done this differently. Point is, we're sick and tired living out of our suitcases. We want to settle. We want to have our house, and we want to set up our life, and we're all anxious to do that. But we're also aware.
I definitely know how that is.
Yeah.
With foreclosure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Living out of the basement.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, it's one of those times where you could be like, I just want to hold on to the perfect thing that I want, and you can, but it may hurt more. It may cost more. We're going to sit here and tough it out for 9 days with a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old in a closed space, and he's asking, when do we unload our toys? Now, come to think of it, maybe I should rethink this plan. But I'm actually, you know, being open to the possibility that we might just need to take the house that is now available today, is empty, ready to move in. Does that mean we've compromised? Yeah, but did we compromise pain as well? Yes, we compromised for less pain and more house now. And you two might decide that there's things in your life that are worth trading, and you may not reflect the same values you did when you were younger. Maybe they're similar, but they're a little more wise or adult.
Yeah.
Or rundown mom, you know? It's okay. Like, you know, there's good memes about this, I know. Someone's got a meme. Or a reel. There's a few.
Yeah. Yeah.
You get the last words.
What?
You get the last words. We're wrapping up, so okay. I'll leave you kind of some final thoughts.
Yeah. I mean, I guess on top of that, my next appointment today is actually one I'm kind of embarrassed about. So I guess I'll close with that one.
More than usual?
Yeah, maybe.
Okay.
And it piles on to everything else. So it's kind of maybe good exposure for me. So I was really struggling like a couple weeks ago with just like hauling Chloe around, like having to go in the grocery stores and stuff, and like being just super sore, and like I have like ribs that like to pop out just often. And so I asked Rod if I could get a handicap parking like sticker or whatever, placard. So I have to have a virtual like appointment at the DMV to get that. But I'm really embarrassed by it, because part of me is like, well, I can totally just like not have one. I'm capable. Like, I'm not like always like struggling to get in. But I'm like, well, I can also choose when to use it. And like, okay. I don't know.
Well,
still, like,
who's Chloe? Which one of those decisions do you think Chloe will side with? And I ask it that way because it doesn't just impact you.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot nicer to not be like almost dropping her too.
Well, and even just, let's just say, just being jostled across a parking lot when the weather's not great, or mom got busted on our outing and she's got less time for me today, you know? At some point, it's not so much that you are capitulating and surrendering what you value most, it's that what you value is changing.
Yeah.
And she's worth it. So
yeah. Well, and I feel like I will definitely come across some judgment from people.
Is she worth it?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's worth it. And so are you. But it's always nice to at least start with someone you identify as worth it. You know, we were all kids that were worth it. We once were Chloe. Mm-hmm. And she deserves to have her mom be in the best shape possible when it comes to, like, not having to have her ribs pop out all the time. The way I see it, you can't actually refuse this interview, but it's not because of embarrassment. It's because you're more than just your own values now. You're her, too. So, mm-hmm. And you're going to teach her someday about how the opinions of others or even your own self-judgment isn't all that defines whether you're being a good mom.
Yeah.
Making the right decisions. So to me, I'm just impressed as heck that you're having the interview, let alone that you're going to go through with it. I'm really proud of you in a funny way for going and getting a disability placard today.
Yay.
I'm proud of you for that, because what looks to others like maybe that's not hard, it's one of the hardest things you could be doing. Like, you're bench pressing 1,000 pounds mentally today, and I'm really impressed. I'm glad you shared that. It just depends what it's for, right? If it's just to indulge myself in a selfish way, well, of course I feel bad. But if it's like, there's other stuff going on here.
Oh, well, I'm definitely going to be like, maybe I am selfish. Like,
okay.
It's plan to not use it in, like,
you use it or not, but
yeah.
But even if there was a part of you liked parking closer, it wouldn't mean you were wrong.
Yeah.
You got too many people that tell you you have a medical stuff going on, and underneath that too, I think there's just, even if it didn't have a medical name, you still do carry an invisible handicap, and that's no shame. We just acknowledge that in mental health a little more readily, I guess, is that there's some things that, or not less readily, that there's some things that we can't always do.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, some of it is that, like, sometimes I can get, like, really busy carrying her around and stuff.
I hope you figure out what you're comfortable with, but I am really very pleased with seeing you today and hearing this, and are you still at the next meeting? Because I'll be in a place with Wi-Fi, so I'll start that on time.
Yeah, tomorrow I won't be running around.
Okay, I'll send you a couple studies that I have, and look forward to conversing some more with you.
Awesome, thank you.
Thanks, Emily.
Good to see you.
Good to see you too. Bye.
Bye.